Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Second Act Podcast. And just before we get into the podcast, we would just like to reiterate how grateful we are to be able to record this podcast on Treaty 7 land, which is inhabited by the Siksika, Sunni, Blackfoot, and many other First Nations people who have been here long before us. It's very important that we acknowledge these peoples, and this was actually brought to light to us by our guest today, Heidi Davis.
Yeah, Heidi pointed out that there's a number of points of view brought to her attention by her partnership with the Blood Tribe in Southern Alberta. It's an incredible conversation. She's a recreational therapist. She's moved around a little bit around Canada. She settled back in Southern Alberta. And her story was just beginning when she came back and settled down.
Yeah, Heidi talks about how important, how much of a family lady she is and how important her family is to her. And it's, I'd imagine seeing the world through the eyes of a therapist shows you how important a family, how important a supportive family can be to young people and people who aren't so young. So it's a great pod to listen to, and definitely opened our eyes to a bunch of things that we didn't really consider before.
Well, and stuff that we just didn't understand. We never took the time to ask, how does a canned land acknowledgement settle with you, land with you? And I think Heidi brought some stuff to light. So I'm really glad that we were able to sit down. Incredible conversation. Heidi's so passionate about what she does. And I believe that everyone will enjoy this one. So sit back, buckle up. Let's turn it over to Heidi Davis.
Thank you so much for having me, Gord.
I'm really anxious to kind of get into the nitty gritty of your story and find out, you know, who you are and some of the things that you've done as you've kind of partaken a couple of different opportunities in your life. But I really do think that it's important to sit down at first and just talk with people and understand a little bit about, you know, who they are today. And then we can go back and kind of figure out how you ended up there a little bit, you know, and within 45 minutes. We don't have to go too deep, but I think it's really important that you let people understand just who Heidi Davis is.
Well, thank you. I live in Southern Alberta in Lethbridge, Sokokotoki. We're in Blackfoot territory. I was born and raised here and left for 10 years with my husband and started our family on the East Coast and then came back. We were always making our way back to family, always trying to make our way back home. And so the opportunity came to move home, and we've been back here and settling in for the last probably 15 years. And my family is my most important thing to me, my immediate family. I have three kids and a husband, and then my siblings are everything, and we're lucky enough to still have our parents. So that's a huge part of my identity. My work is as a recreation therapist, and I've done that in three different provinces in several streams of care. I love my work. I'm so grateful I get to do it. I work on a stroke rehab team and then with the addiction and mental health outreach team with AHS. And then on the side, I teach yoga and meditation, and that's one of my greatest loves also. So I feel like I get to pursue things that I love and share it with people. And that's a little snapshot of who I am.
It's interesting that you guys took an opportunity to go and explore Canada a little bit and get out to the East Coast. But you were able to get back kind of, you know, you mentioned that you have your parents and you're able to get back and kind of get an appreciation for being away and, you know, doing it on your own, your little family unit, building up the ties that you have to do. But you're able to get back and be a part of everybody's life. And I think that's something that speaks to me. My wife and I are from a little town in Saskatchewan, and we're the only ones out in Alberta. Everybody mm-hmm. else is back in Saskatchewan, which was just right for a long time. But now that we're a little older, our parents are a little older, the kids, you know, we try to get back. We spend a bunch of time in the summers back in Saskatchewan at a lake lot that we have, you know, really close to everybody. But I think it's those, as you get a little older, you start to appreciate it a little more. You were able to get back and make a living doing what you love to do, make a life back close to your family. And I think that that's an incredible distinction to make, that you're able to get away find out who you were, what makes your family unit tick, and then come back. And mm-hmm. and with the work that you do and the way you affect people, I think that that's an important thing for you to have in the back of your mind, that you understand that about yourself.
Yeah. And, you know, I didn't know, you know, when we came back to Alberta, I didn't know that it was this Blackfoot territory calling me. Like, I always had that connection to the mountains that are close to us. They're just west of us. And the wide open prairie, the time along the Old Man River. We have a farm in the Willow Creek area, so we spend a lot of time there. I felt this call and like this familiarity to be under these huge skies and to see the stars from the prairies. And, you know, anyone who eye rolls about the prairies, I get it. I just came back from vacation somewhere really beautiful by the ocean. But there's something really raw and healing about this land. And I didn't know it was my deep connection to the place I was born and the stories in the land that I call home. I didn't know why it called me, but it did. And then that's where my greatest growth has been in the last 8 years, is making my way back to this land that has always known me.
It's I guess, and it takes, like, you kind of have to see the yin for the yang too, right? If you had never been away to somewhere coastal with the ocean, you know, we all take trips and spend time around the ocean. You go somewhere warm in the winter, but to live that life for an extended period and then come back, everything's just going to be more vibrant. You know, that mm-hmm. Chinook wind is going to feel a little bit different than those cold winds coming off the blows off the East Coast. And I think that gives you an opportunity to really appreciate those things that you may have missed along the way and didn't fully appreciate the first go around.
100%. Yeah, absolutely.
So you guys came back and at this point, you know, you mentioned you're a recreation therapist. I think they're probably, you know, for most people is going to require a little bit of a follow-up on that. What exactly is recreation therapy?
We are part of the Allied Health portfolio in healthcare. So if you think of physiotherapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy, so we are trying to get patients, supporting patients or clients to achieve their goals. But instead of using a modality like speech therapy, physiotherapy, we're looking at leisure and meaningful activity. So I like to say we are looking at personhood. So if you were a golfer and had a stroke, we're going to do everything we can to get you back on the golf course. And so we talked earlier about the why for the podcast, or the why in general. When I'm face to face with the clients I get to walk with, I want to know who they are, what gets them out of bed, what gives them that, you know, that life, that spirit. And that's what I'm going to try to break down and bring back into their lives. And so I said to a nurse recently, I said, you're not going to die without rec therapy, but your spirit might. Because it kind of comes down to the most essential parts of who we are. That's what I want to use on a health journey. So I've had people get back on their horse. I've had people polish their motorcycle, anticipating the day they could get back on their motorcycle. You know, think of the things that would bring you the most amount of joy, or what you would do on a Saturday where you have no plans, and then imagine that was gone. And so bringing that leisure, that meaningful activity, that purposeful activity back into somebody's life is huge for quality of life and achieving health goals.
It really speaks to, you know, might not be a terribly popular sentiment right now, but it speaks to the society that we live in, that, you know, healing can take on that kind of an appearance. You know, so many places in the world, like, healing from a stroke would be just around the physio and the speech and getting to the point where you're, you know, back to functioning, quote unquote. Yeah. And really here in Canada and Alberta, we're looking at, like, to your point, getting somebody knitting again, getting somebody mm-hmm. golfing again, doing all these things that make the quality. You're not just living, mm-hmm. you know, you're not just alive, you're living. You're not just breathing, right? And that's exactly where we're trying to get people to. It must be incredibly fulfilling to be a part of somebody's journey like that.
It's the best, like, to be able to break down the steps and break it down in a way that we can make it achievable, and then see somebody, you know, let's say an equestrian. That's something that I love horses, and So whenever an equestrian comes across my caseload, I'm always really excited. But we might start with undoing the buckles of a saddle and dealing with the tack and working on hand strength and the physio components or the OT components, but we're doing it by polishing the leather on their saddle or eventually taking the feed to the horse, using the lead line to walk them around. And then, you know, if I ever see them mounted and riding again, it's awesome to see them achieve that goal and get back to that meaningful activity.
So as you're progressing through your career doing something like this, and obviously, you know, it sounds very noble when you're maybe going through a course book and trying to figure out what you want to be, you know, when you, I always say grow up in quotes, because do we ever, but, you know, that sounds like, man, that would be really fulfilling. That would be really great. And then, oh, it looks like I make enough money to live. So that's great too. And you can do, and then you get into it and you're like, obviously the first little while you're developing your style and, it may not, you know, there's going to be some growing pains as there is with any career, but then you kind of hit your stride and you have a long time left. You're not going to retire anytime soon. But you're good at it and people are responding to the way you want to do your work. And it must be just incredibly gratifying to keep going and knowing that you still have some runway ahead of you, that you can start to get better at it and maybe push the boundaries of it a little bit. Can you talk about maybe some opportunities you've had in your career where the book wasn't quite suiting what you wanted to do and you had to push and develop a different formula or a different way of doing business to get the results that you knew were right there?
Mm-hmm. Well, a couple things come to mind. So when I started on the stroke team, it's a transdisciplinary team. So there's only 10 of us, but we work within very gray boundaries. So I might have the RN on the golf course with the client, and I might be checking blood sugars in the con. So we have blurry boundaries around what we're doing in any given session, because it's about the client's goal, not about our clinical goal. So that reframe was huge for me. Like, it's not about what I think is going to bring you joy and give you a meaningful life. I have to listen and understand what you believe. So it's less prescriptive and more, I think, creative for me to say, okay, I hear you. Let's find a way to make that happen. And so that was a big shift, because if I've been in clinical practice in a facility or something like that, there's limitations. But when I started going out into the community, it's like you or I facing the community and sampling what we want to do or finding the barriers and removing those. So that was huge to find some creativity. And then the last 8 years, my focus in my work has been with the Indigenous Wellness Core. So within Alberta Health Services, we have an Indigenous wellness team. I wanted to create some pathways for Indigenous people to access service, to remove some of those barriers, and to create an understanding about what the barriers are. And so I really have tried to focus on that. And in doing that, in my desire to provide care and to provide opportunity and to lift Indigenous people, my own heart healed and my own life completely shifted. And it's been the greatest blessing and just surprise. I didn't know that all of this was waiting for me. I didn't know. And it changed everything. It changed my work. It changed my personal life. Everything shifted and changed when I started to understand. And so that would be, yeah, a great, great point to say, like, we can do things differently, but in the end, I think I've gotten more out of it than any client I've served.
So I don't want to get political, but I understand if maybe it does on the surface, at least, but like, what about that you didn't understand that diving in headfirst allowed you to kind of feel that, you know, everything, if things were good and maybe great, and then they locked into place doing this, working with the Indigenous, what about it kind of helped you get there that maybe you needed to immerse yourself into to understand fully?
Such a good question. So I created a program in partnership with a local museum. It was an awesome art and history program. And we ended up getting recognized by the Governor General, and they flew us to Ottawa. four of us. And it was just, it was in November about 9 years ago. And we got this amazing recognition and had this whole History Makers Weekend in Ottawa. It was at the War Museum. And things were great. Like, we went and we were excited to be recognized for our program and on this national scale. And there was an Algonquin elder, this woman, she was a lawyer, and she got up to welcome everyone. She was the MC for the weekend, and she had this beautiful eagle feather. She got up to the podium and she welcomed us to her territory. And she started talking about the land and the healing and the seven generations of healing. It's going to take 150 years of healing, and about listening to the ancestors and the story. And she talked about residential school and Indian hospitals and the 60s scoop. And a lot of what she talked about, I did not know what she was talking about. Maybe vaguely, like maybe I knew some of the language around it, but as she spoke with such passion, I was embarrassed that I did not know what she was talking about. I'd never heard of an Indian hospital. And I didn't know a lot of the history. And when I think about it now, I graduated from high school in 1994, and the last residential school didn't close until 1996. Like, we didn't learn about it. It was current at that time. And so I was really bothered. Like, I didn't, there, it was the first time I'd heard land acknowledgements. I was curious about what it meant to say traditional versus unceded territory. I was really at a place where I just was embarrassed that I didn't know what she was talking about as somebody who worked in healthcare and as a Canadian. So I came home from that trip. I learned as much as I could on that weekend. It was amazing. But I came home from that trip and I approached my manager and I said, I want to do a program for Indigenous people because there's barriers to healthcare. And the health outcomes in Alberta are terrible for Indigenous people, like 16-year less life expectancy, higher infant mortality rate, higher rates of diabetes and chronic disease. So many barrier, like so many health outcomes that are just inappropriate in 2024 to be having for Indigenous people compared to other Albertans and across the country. So anyways, we started this program and it was an epic fail because I didn't know what I was doing. So I went out to the Cardston Borders Blood Tribe and I went out and I was going to pitch this great idea and, you know, offer these services exactly how we did them for the regular programming, that we didn't get referrals for Indigenous people. And it did not meet the needs of Indigenous people, but I didn't know that. I didn't know what the needs were. So I got one referral. I ended up seeing that person one-to-one. And then kind of scrapped it and was like, well, I mean, it's just too big. It's too overwhelming. Like, what could I possibly do? And then about a year later, my team was approached to develop an art in hospitals initiative. And I did. And I worked with a team. That's a whole other story, but the most important part of that story is there is a traditional wellness coordinator, an elder, and that very first meeting, the very first time we met, she called me over. She's a tall, really powerful woman. Her name is Sylvia Ann Fox, and she called me over and she said, listen to me carefully. We can have meetings and we can talk and we can plan and we can go about this and try to make something perfect. There's no such thing. Pick me up tomorrow. We're going to go get some supplies and we're just going to start. And she said, trust me, we're going to go about this in a good way. So I did that. I picked her up. We talked. She shared stories. And I realized I needed to follow her lead and not come in like I knew everything just because I'd done 20 years of programming. And I listened and we created a relationship starting that very day. And she said to me, I'm going to walk with you. She said, stay close to me. We're going to walk together and I'm going to teach you our ways. Just the way she talked, it brought me right back to that Algonquin elder. And I thought, like, I got to listen. This is a gift. This is an opportunity. And her family has since adopted my family. My name, Buffalo Talking Woman, her brother gave to me. And that's the name of their mother. So I carry their mother, Emma Many Feathers, name. And so that was the birth. It was at work and it was the birth of a relationship that is like so special and has informed everything I've done since then. And now for my one job, my stroke job, I see everyone. We actually are just starting to provide some care on Blood Tribe, which is exciting. But my other job, my entire work is with the Blood Tribe and Piikani Nation and the people from those nations. And it completely informed the way I went forward in my work.
So I don't expect you to have like the silver bullet for these, you know, relationships and how we interact, but I feel like it's very dangerous for us to only know a little bit because we think we know so much more than we do, right? We get these little bits and pieces. The world's really information wise is so small that everybody has the ability to go look it up, but we really don't do a good job of doing a good job of it. And you were kind of, you know, like you said, you went there, you maybe knew a little bit, you didn't know as much as you thought you should have, you were embarrassed. And then you found somebody who immediately, you know, commanded that respect and she understood what you needed in order to be successful. And you guys were able to cultivate this. And I just look around and I just see that in society, there's just no patience or whatever the word is to understand each other, to build these relationships so that we can, what's it going to take? And I mean, obviously I'm not talking very, very macro, but like, how do we get to the point where people are willing to just sit down and listen to each other, much the same that you and Sylvia did?
Exactly. And you know, my favorite, when I talk about the calls to action and I've been doing some other reconciliation work with some of my Indigenous friends and, some of the calls to action are simple. Like if you start looking at the ones for business and the ones for education and healthcare, it is so overwhelming and it feels like an impossible feat. But some of the calls to action everyone can do and be empowered: read a book by an Indigenous author, attend a powwow, learn some language of the territory that you're on, understand the territory that you're on. So don't read a scripted land acknowledgement. Anybody can do that. But fully embody what it is to live and work and play and identify with the land that holds you. And so I think some of those practices, that's doable. Like you do some research, find an Indigenous author and read the book like that. And those things become layers of learning and unlearning. And I think from my experience with the elders that I've been able to cultivate relationships with, no one has ever turned me away. Like if I come with a question or a request or asking for direction or whatever it is, not one time have I been turned away. Always I get told, sit down, put on the tea. My girl, don't question yourself. You know, you've been taught this. Or, you know, the grandmothers would tell you this. Like a lot of times the guidance comes in the form of a story. And so having the ears to listen for the story, listen for what the point is, we can all do that. So I really do think it's a one person at a time. You can read about residential school, but when you talk to somebody who went through residential school and they share their firsthand experience, it is different. Like the vibration of it is different in your body. And when you talk to somebody who, you know, said goodbye to their grandfather for the last time going to residential school, and that's their last memory of the person who raised them, you don't forget that story. And so I think, I think it can't be as simple as a story and listening, but can it? Like, could it be that that softens the heart, that opens the heart, and then there's a willingness to learn? And I think from my experience, Indigenous people are very intuitive, very connected. And I think often they can tell it from my friends and family. You're not gonna fake it around a lot of Indigenous people. Like they can tell if there's a authenticity to the questions. If it's a checkbox on like a reconciliation project or something, that's very different than personal learning and inquiry for understanding versus doing the right thing. Like it's doing the right thing, but for the highest good.
It's interesting that you mentioned the land acknowledgements. You know, we do we do a land acknowledgement at the start of the podcast. My son read it out 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago when we started. We pulled it together and read about it and caught, you know, whatever. It's the same one we've been using. Everyone makes fun of him. He's 16 now, so he read it when he was 14. So his voice is changed significantly. So that's usually everyone's comment when, but you know, the three main kind of pieces of feedback we get on it is, oh, that's so great that you do it, or you shouldn't script it. It should be, you know, different every time, and you should, or it's a complete waste of time. Why are you bothering? And it's like, mm-hmm. how one, you know, first of all, fast forward if it's 15 seconds if you don't want to listen to it. Second of all, if it should be better, if it should be done differently, I'm all ears. Let's talk about how it can be done in a more respectful manner. Or if it's just the greatest thing that you've ever heard, well, then that's great and I appreciate the feedback. But you know what I mean? It's kind of like, I think for fear of doing it wrong, lots of people do nothing. You know what I mean? Because they don't want to ask or totally. They don't want to be caught, you know, trying to be respectful and inadvertently being the opposite.
100%. And I think that speaks to the need for Indigenous advice and wisdom. So to be able to have relationships where you can have a vulnerable conversation and say, can I run this by you? Am I on the right track? Is this okay? And so there's the blessing or the encouragement is really essential. So if I'm writing a program or if I'm creating a poster, or if I have an intuition about going a certain direction for an offering in the community, I do not do that without consultation. And that sounds fancy, but it could be a phone call to say, hey, I have this thought, I have this idea. Do you think this would be okay? Or the other day, a neighbor messaged me and said, is there a Blackfoot word for amen? Or like a way to close a blessing? They'd been asked to open an event with a prayer. And I said, yes, I've heard, and I gave my examples, and I said, but let me quickly check with the elder.
Right.
Because we can get it wrong, and good intentions aren't enough. So we actually, it's that idea of nothing about us without us. Like, I want the power to land in the Indigenous person. So, and then there's some assurance going forward. Like, you're never going to please everybody. There's always going to be critics. But I can then speak to going about a process that feels true and authentic to me and honoring the way I've been taught. And so I'm going to ask the questions and then take the advice. And if I'm told like, no, that's not the direction, I listen. And sometimes it's hard because I'm a go-getter. I like to get it done. I don't like to, you know, I'm more of a visionary and a dreamer more than a planner. So I just like to do it. And if I'm told, no, not yet, you're going to have to wait. It's hard, but I'm going to stick to my integrity in honoring those teachings. And really, I'm not going to token ask for consent or respect or approval. I'm going to actually follow through with that.
Well, and you've garnered enough equity within that space in society, the people that you're working with there from the Piikani and the Blood tribe, that the idea of losing that is at this point troubling. You don't want to. You've worked really hard. I think it's really intimidating for people that maybe don't have that equity and don't understand that there is forgiveness and the effort that if you go and you come and you're authentic and you're, you know, what the outcome you're looking for is, there's probably a lot more I don't know what the right word is, but it doesn't all have to be so serious. You can go into them and say, I just want help with this. And they'll forgive the stumblings because 100%. You're going the right way.
Humor is a huge part of the culture. Like humor. And like, if you got start getting some jokes and some like getting poked fun at a little bit, like you've got some relationship there because there is a lighthearted side of it. And, you know, I think, and the more learning you do, the more you attend ceremony or attend powwows or go to learning sessions, lectures and things, pretty soon you have an understanding and it does become less intimidating. But it's that, I think you nailed it when you said, like, I care more now. I care in a different way. I care because there's real people and real relationships and the stories and the teachings have landed and really affected my own heart. So there's way more to lose than you just like any relationship. Yeah. So yeah, like I don't take that trust for granted. When I'm invited out to the nations, I teach yoga at Standoff on Mondays, and I love it. Like, and when I go, I don't set foot on the nation without gratitude and a recognition, like I'm a guest here. And for me to be invited here and able to interact with people that I just have so much respect for, I don't take that lightly. And I really want to maintain that sense of trust and that relationship building, because, man, the more you know, the less you know. Like, the more I understand, the less I actually know. And just the gift of being invited into ceremony. And so Sylvia Ann Fox, she had me come to one of her bundle ceremonies, and I've gone now for years, but the very first one, she gave me just a couple instructions and she said, come. And I didn't know what a bundle was. I didn't know what to expect. It was intimidating to show up, and, you know, and it, I was welcomed with so much warmth and so much teaching, and just, it was the most incredible experience, and it truly felt like a coming home. And you know, to have an elder put a feather on your head and pray for you, or to smudge you and take that sage and smudge you and cleanse you and speak into your life and encourage you to go forward and do good work, and like to have someone see your heart in a pure way, it's just beautiful. And so I've been back now, I probably 7 or 8 times to the bundle, and now I'm helping serve and I'm helping welcome people. And like, I'm very much included and part of it.
So the you've been doing this now as a part of your job, and you have these programs and you're working through it. And throughout, at some point in this, you get connected with yoga, your inner self, your spirituality. But it sounds like you know, the notion of that wasn't foreign to you. It was maybe just a different expression. And now you've got the wellness coaching part of your career, where you're going on these longer yoga retreats and you're delving deeper into it. But that wasn't new to you at all at that point, was it?
The spirituality of it, and like the seeking journey, the journey to the heart part of it, that wasn't new. But I had never done yoga until 2018. And so I had been going through a really hard personal time. And my sister runs retreats. She has a studio in Calgary called Ballet Beats. And she started running retreats. And so she said, you're coming. And my ticket was to Liberia, which is a city in Costa Rica. I didn't even know where that was. I was like, oh, we're going to West Africa? Wild. Like, this is crazy. I'm there. So I went as like almost, I didn't know, but almost an intervention of like, hang on a sec, like you got to come back to center and remember who you are and be able to take a deep breath. And so I went in 2018, and the practice welcomed me like a beautiful homecoming, and I'd never done it. And I just remember feeling like energy move through my body. I took deep breaths into my lungs in a way that I had never noticed possible. And the words landed differently. I couldn't tell what was tears and what was sweat. And I've never looked back. I've had a really beautiful practice ever since. I have the most incredible teachers. That led me to take my yoga teacher training. So I did a 200 hour and then a 300 hour and a yoga nidra and a meditation. And I've just been pursuing it ever since. And that's been, those would be, I would say, like my two biggest shifts in, when you talk about the second act, those would be my two biggest shifts I never saw coming, was the Indigenous learning and that welcome into the Indigenous community and how that's impacted. Like, I gave you examples that some were work, but most of those are my, like, that's my family time. That's my personal time. Like, that's where I spend my time picking medicine and looking for the grandfather rocks and, you know, calling the eagle beside the river, because I've been taught those ways and it feels good and true. Like that coming back to Southern Alberta kind of feeling. And so yoga was the same way. That would be a gift that was waiting for me that I didn't know I needed. I didn't know I was missing. And it's all come together in this bizarre, kind of crazy way how life does. So now Sylvia and I co-facilitate an Indigenous informed yoga where she translates 15 poses into Blackfoot and I teach the yoga class. And we've offered it to hundreds of people, and we have one coming up in a week, actually. We offered it at the Blackfoot Confederacy Teachers Convention and had 40 educators come to our session. Like, it's like the merge of so many things I love, and I just can't believe it's like coming together in that way. And so I wanted to be able to offer yoga classes and different wellness. I do different art and team building, different things like that for corporations. And so I was trying to think of a name to call my practice because, you know, you have to have a license and a business and all of those things. So I was deep in a meditation and it came to me, Sylvia's words, when she said, she invited me to the first bundle and I said, yeah, when is it? And, you know, in my colonized way, it's like, let me grab my phone and my calendar and put it in. And, you know, she said, no, you need to start listening in the spring. You need to start listening for the first thunder. And when you hear that first thunder, that's the most powerful time to reach out to Creator, to connect with Creator. And after the first thunder is when we open the bundle. And so my yoga practice is called First Thunder Wellness. Because I just thought, like, there, if that's not mindfulness, I don't know what is.
Well, this is like the funnest time to host a podcast when you're into something that you don't know anything about. And people say all these interesting things. And if you're paying any attention, you have questions. And you started off talking about how the practice knew that you needed something. But I'm curious if the practice also understood your receptiveness to that you were, I don't know if throwing yourself on the mercy of it is quite the right way, but you knew you needed a change. You needed something. You got yourself, you took the leap of faith to put yourself in a position where you could possibly have some change come to your life. And, you know, the stars aligned, or whatever your term is to describe right place, right time. Mm-hmm. And you're able to take all these learnings that you'd already kind of, or at least the open-mindedness that you had to have in order for your professional life to be as successful as it was to that point. And now you were going to apply it to your personal life through this other opportunity. And I just, is that too simple, oversimplifying it? Or are we on the right path when I think like that?
You're on the right path. Like, everything is everything. And it's that idea of when the student is ready, the teacher appears. And I've had that in my life so many times, like that elder holding up that feather. Why did I have shivers down my spine? Like, why did I have something light up in my heart to be like, I need to know, I need to know. And then the teachers came into my path. And I would say the same thing for yoga. Like, my heart needed to heal. I needed to return to who I was. And you know, my sisters, the yoga teachers, the teachers I've been giving my attention to study with since 2018, they've all appeared when I need them. And then it does all align in a way that maybe it is too simple. I don't know, but it's like, it's just this orchestra of purpose. And so even on my stroke team, like, I use yoga with my stroke clients all the time. Like, the entire team will be like, try yoga with this person. And so I get to bring it to my work. I get to bring it to my Indigenous community. I get to have my personal practice. I don't know if it gets better than that. And so sharing what I love and then also using it as my own medicine, it feels right. And so that idea of journeying to the heart and like the feeling, the expression of whether something's right or wrong, or you're on the right track, it feels right. And so if that's the journey to get a glimpse of God, I'm there.
Well, and not everything has to be so explained and black and white. The you know, there's a saying like, did the rain dance work, or did you just dance till it rained? Right. And it's like, but it doesn't matter, right? You got what you needed at the end. You got the rain, you know. And if you are looking for those those people or those feelings or that that coping tool, that coping mechanism or whatever it is you need in your life. Mm-hmm. Is it really critical how it got there? Or is the fact that it's there, right?
Totally.
That's the important part.
It's true. And then the therapist in me wants to decode it in a way that I can teach it to get people to buy in. So I might, you know, when I say I moved energy through my body, that isn't language everybody would understand. But if you give the analogy of like my teacher always says, unwinding a garden hose, getting out all the kinks, and eventually water flows through that hose. Like that to me is a really good visual about the actual physical practice of yoga, but that's only one element of yoga. And so, but to be able to explain that or explain through meditation, like the changes in the prefrontal cortex and like how to empower people that action, right action can change, well, or wrong action, like action has impact. And so we can change our brain, we can change our body, we can change our well-being, we can change our quality of life. And, you know, what every minute matters. You know, what we do today determines exactly where we'll be in 5 years, in 10 years. And so I love the empowerment part of that. So when somebody tells me their goal, it's kind of an actionable step to say it starts with a deep breath. And it seems simple, but there's an accumulation there of life, of prana. There's an accumulation there of empowerment. So I just, and there's wonder, like how beautiful we can choose to play with our breath and create changes in the nervous system. And then when we let go and put it away, our breath breathes us and it just keeps on going and we get to carry on. Like there's kind of this really interesting study of our own existence in doing that. And I love it because it doesn't matter who you came from, like where you came from or who you are, you know, people's trauma journeys or people's stories, it's sort of an equalizer because it's like everybody has a story and it comes back to that idea of we're journeying together. What's that going to be like? How close is that going to be? How far do you open your heart? And I think the world around us becomes a reflection of how we see the world and of who we are. And so every time I bump up against beauty and wisdom and strength, I'm affirmed that I'm on the right path. Like that must be also inside of me.
Well, yeah. And I think if you look for that in the world, that'll be what you see, whether it's looking out at the world or looking in the mirror, right? Those are the things you'll become attuned to seeing. It's exactly. No different than if you look for ugliness and hatred, that's what you'll see. You'll see it everywhere, right? I just think that we're very trainable. And unfortunately, we kind of sometimes train ourselves to look for the wrong things, or maybe not the wrong things, but there's so many more obvious, beautiful things that we could be looking for. Of course, we focus on some of the more negative things. And I think that that's, unfortunately, with media, social media, the phones, that's kind of how it goes sometimes. And it's just nice to take a step back and say, wait a second, that sunset was pretty nice to look at.
Exactly. What a gift. And those moments, of course, everyone gets caught up in the chaos. Like that's part of the human experience. But how quickly can we call ourselves back? And how much can we quiet the mind to notice?
Right.
Like, wait a second, this is not for my highest good. Call yourself back. And one of the ancient texts says, like, your mind might wander 1,000 times, 1,001, call it back. So it's that calling home, that coming home. And I have to pitch myself sometimes to be like, how has all of this happened? And it's beautiful. And like I was sharing with you, I just came back from two different retreats in Costa Rica, and to be able to assist on a retreat and guide other people to those realizations or that inward path or seeing their highest self. Like, I just don't know if I can think of something that feels like a greater honor. And it's all just people. Like, it's all just this human experience and these with people, but I think sometimes the yoga pathway, the traditional teachings, the story, the land, like the teachings from the land, for me, those are the tools that allow that inner journey, that those are the pathways in to get to that. And for other people, it'll be different. You know, maybe it's music, maybe it's drumming, maybe it's physicality. I don't know. Distance running, like people climbing mountains. Like there's a lot of different ways to get to the same place. But for me, I don't know of more generosity than from those teachings.
I want to be respectful of your time, and we could probably chat about this much longer. I just want to touch base on a couple of things. You mentioned that the Governor General recognized you 9 years ago, but I did find some reading that you were awarded the Queen Elizabeth II Platinum Jubilee Medal. Sounded like it was a provincial honor. You want to take us through kind of what you did to garner the recognition, and then what specifically they recognized?
Oh, thank you. That's so nice you found that. I did receive that last December. I guess it was a year ago December. I volunteered for 8 years on the board of the Lethbridge Therapeutic Riding Association. And then again, my own horse, my own love of horses, volunteering at the Therapeutic Riding Center, and then the trifecta of my work as a recreation therapist. When COVID hit, I pitched an idea. Remember the beginning of COVID? It was like hearts in the window. Everything was hearts in the window. And so I pitched an idea of horses in the window, and we couldn't have anyone out riding because of COVID. So I said, well, let's get the horses going to places where people are potentially isolated, like long-term care facilities and treatment centers. And so we did that. The amazing team at the LTRA, the Lethbridge Therapeutic Riding, did that. And the horses went out and did visits all through COVID through windows. And sometimes people would crank open windows and try to feel the horse, and it brought joy, and it was simple. And then further to kind of my calling, I asked if we could take the horses to the downtown park here, where a lot of our underserved and unhomed people live. And they said yes. And so twice a month for a year, we brought the horses down to the park, and were able to build connections, build relationships, listen, help people access healthcare, like maybe phoning and making doctor's appointments, or I would send photos of wounds or concerns to the nursing team. So creative ways to bring healthcare to the underserved. And it was the horses that connected us. So that recognition was for kind of creative programming with the horses.
It's I always have a little bit of a running kind of ticker here with my paper that I'm always scribbling on during a pod. And it started out when I was listening for people that would say or a lot. And I'd be, okay, am I going to have to go through and edit this out? But for yours, it's the word connection. Everything you've talked about revolves around connection some way, something. It feels like that kind of once you feel it, once you understand it, once you know how important it is, you just haven't been able to stop yourself from looking for ways to help people make connections. And I mean, some people, like you said, do it with music or do it with the running and they climb mountains and they find their way to connect. Is there a way, I guess, to ever satisfy that when we live in a world that lacks so much connection? Or is this something that you're just going to do forever?
Well, I hope I can always use my life in a way that uplifts the lives of other people. I hope I always am fascinated by story. Like I think that I love the idea of story and holding stories, carrying stories, listening to stories. And I think that's a way of connecting. I don't see a bottom. Like I just think with some of the unfolding in my life, I welcome what's coming. Like I couldn't have dreamed. I had never set foot on a yoga mat, and now it's such a huge part of my life. So I don't know what other big dreams are waiting, but I think you're right. That idea of connection will be, that will be what it comes down to, whether it's connecting to others or to myself, or helping people find their own connection to their highest good and what it is that they need to do. I love the metaphor. One of my yoga teachers always says that we're lighting metaphorical candles so other people can find the path. And I love that idea. Like if I can forge a trail, or if I can create some connections that create something that's lasting and sustainable, and I want to do it. And I don't know who said it, but there's a quote that, and I could send you the reference, I have it written somewhere, but it really, I love that, says, in a world that's hurting so much, may we not add one drop of suffering. And I think of that all the time, like how can I go through my life creating the least amount of harm and creating the most amount of joy or light or peace or whatever it is that someone needs. And I feel like I'm living in my purpose. I'm grateful, and I welcome whatever teachers are still waiting for me.
So the way I like to wrap up the pod, and you kind of touched on it there, I think, but like what we like to talk about the idea of success, what success, what you might've thought success had been at previous points in your life. What success has looked like to you to this point, you know, as you've gotten into your practice, your career, and what do you think success is going to look like moving forward for you?
Wow. I feel successful when I am making choices from a place of bravery, from a place of like, maybe it pushes the envelope, but I'm still brave enough to do it. When I feel proud, when my kids are proud of me, like when I'm using my life in a way that makes me feel proud. And there's nothing more meaningful to me than seeing other people's spirits alive and thriving. And if my life can contribute to that in any way, I'm here for it. That would make me feel successful.